Okay, I'm gonna call today's UCRRA Reform Committee to order. I never trust that clock, is that correct? Pretty close, 9:47. Can you take attendance, please?
Sure. Chair Baden, he's out. Vice Chair, well, Chair Bartels.
Present.
Legislative Green.
Present.
Legislator, oh, sorry. Former Legislator Petit.
Here.
Comptroller Gallagher.
Here.
Deputy County Executive LaValle.
Here.
Vice Chair Gordon.
Here.
Excellent. Okay, so we have approval of January 31 and January 15 minutes. Yes?
I read through the minutes online and I made mental notes. I just would like to request, I want to actually mark up the copies. It's tiny little things. The old IDA was supposed to be RRA.
I think I changed that one. I listened to the audio with the one that we had the last time.
Yeah.
So I switched it. I changed that.
Okay.
And if there's anything else, I'll change it.
There's a couple other little things, and I haven't had a chance to mark them up. Could we postpone this till the next meeting?
I was going to say that Legislator Green, if I channeled, like if I were a ventriloquist, you'd be saying exactly what I would have asked. I would have raised my hand and asked. Just, you know, I want to first say that they're super detailed minutes, which is great, but that also, I think, requires a little closer look on our part. And since I saw it last night, I did the same thing. I made mental notes, and then I was like, I need to print it out and mark it. So I would also appreciate until the next meeting. And in the interim, I'm not going to wait till the next meeting to come and talk about it. I'll connect with you, and maybe anyone else with questions can send them to the clerk.
And just so you guys know, what I'm using, exactly what you said, depending on what the word is, it's going to interpret it differently. So, and I don't know like the language, so maybe that's why. And you guys could also let me know and say, oh no, these letters mean this. And I look at it sometimes too. I check it and I'm like, that's not what it is. Let me see. But then I don't know what the correct term is. But for the most part, it has been changed and revised, some of it, that it's kind of like...
Okay, so I don't think we need a motion. We can just take no action and then bring these back at the next meeting, and in the interim, we'll reach out to you. Is everyone else okay with that?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Are our minutes made public after they're adopted?
It's on the website. So it's under Energy and Environment, scroll all the way down, we already added the audio, the minutes, and the agenda.
All right.
So that's already there.
Okay, so... we're going to move into a continued discussion of diversion, and maybe we can post where we're at. But before we do that, I just want to acknowledge that Mark Ryder, so hard not to say Deputy Executive Mark Ryder, is here in his new role. So welcome and thank you for being here. Do you want to take a minute to talk to us at all, or are you just here to...
I'm mainly here to listen, but I will just say thank you, and thank you for... offering me an opportunity to speak. I start on March 4th, the day of progress, and really looking forward to working with the board and implementing their goals. But I've kind of dug in over the last month or so, and am really excited to get to work and hear this commission's recommendations and move forward.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so
I don't know if you guys want, I was looking for that email because you guys needed that information. Mike was on the phone and said, right?
Tracy, before you came in, Jim was going to talk about this letter that we received from the interim executive director.
Okay.
And he started to speak and we said, wait, we want to get you on tape.
Okay.
So that's what
so
it was about.
I will hand the floor over to you, Jim.
The letter is... has a lot of stuff that I think that's a copy of it, right?
Yes.
So we can
yep.
all read it later. But what yep. I think I want to highlight is just, and I'm not necessarily sure I agree with this, but I'll tell you, this is her point of view, and I'll read it. Looking at the UCRA data, One can see that the recycling generated solely within Ulster County could not support a state-of-the-art recycling facility and would likely be an undue financial burden to the taxpayers of Ulster County. In assessing what to do with Ulster County's recyclables, I believe it is important to understand economies of scale, throughput, contamination of feedstock, markets in general, and tip fees. And then she points out, and I'm skipping a lot, but she points out that tip fees in neighboring counties, only Ulster County has free recycling. We have our MRF has a zero tip fee for source-separated dual-stream recyclables. Orange County's MRF tip fee is $120 per ton for single-stream recycling. Sullivan County charges $50 per ton. Greene County charges $68 per ton. Columbia, $80 to $100 per ton for single-stream recycling and $75 per year for residents. So just for a point of information as we move forward, and Anna, as you probably know, has been in the business for decades. So, and, you know, if we have more questions, we can relay them to her or to other people, and Mark, I'm sure, is here to help. But I just thought that was important to point out now as we're discussing, you know, diversion, that this is what an expert is saying about our stream and about what other counties are doing. And that letter is there for people to read it. I sent it in a little late. Sorry, I sent it in yesterday. But there's links and stuff, and I'm happy to discuss it more. But those, to me, were the most pertinent points for the meeting today.
I could forward you guys. If you guys want it, great. I will forward the email to you guys.
Okay. Legislator Green?
I have a slightly different take on it. Mm-hmm. The cost of recycling, I think she may have a point about the advanced MRF, and there may be some middle ground that makes sense. But in terms of charging for recyclables, the cost of operations is integrated into the tipping fee. I think, as I've said a few times, if there is a special project like the Reuse Innovation Center, I think that that's something that might deserve a special net service fee. And it's a net service fee. And I think that, you know, the towns do pay for recycling because they pay for the pulls. And that helps to cover the agency's costs with regard to recycling. But if we're going to maximize waste diversion, I think that the overall cost of operation should be integrated into the tipping fee, and then, you know, I think that gives added incentive to divert the waste.
Yes, please.
Just to follow up with what Legislator Green said, I agree with you, and I'm trying to take a look. I think the difference is the Orange County tipping fee is only $85 a ton, whereas ours is $110. I was looking real quick to see if I could pull up Rockland County. And my fear is we had always used free recycling and composting as a way to get people to divert their waste more. And this is at New Paltz, and it did work. The financial implications of having to pay so much, of having to pay $6 for five bags, when if you recycled, you could probably get that down to two or three, was really instrumental in reducing our waste flow. So and honestly, if you're going to pay the same amount to get rid of your recycling as you are, and probably more, because if we're looking at flow control on top of that, the haulers are going to have to charge quite a bit more so that they can put that back into their system with multiple trucks. Now there's more climate impact because you have multiple trucks. It just, I don't think it's a good idea. You know, I think giving them the initiative, or at least at a much lesser cost, like you do with composting at $20 a ton, is the way to bring this forward, you know, and do everything very locally. We don't want to promote waste anything because we don't want to send it out. That's really the impact that we're causing with climate change is, I mean, garbage is right up there.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure, as I said, I don't necessarily agree with, you know, the idea of charging, but I wanted to set this table from an expert. This is what she's looking at, and I think I would prefer to keep it as cheap or free if possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to have to deal with the economics as an agency in a county.
Deputy Executive LaValle?
Just one thought that crosses my mind is that two things. Some of those counties do have flow control on recycling. Rockland does. So you're dealing with more at that facility. And I know it's really a kind of small percentage of the recycling that goes through the MRF at UCRA currently. The other thing is that it's interesting that even though these other facilities are charging per ton and are in some cases private and most cases single stream, that's still cost beneficial to the private haulers to pay and to drive for that single stream versus the dual stream at the MRF that's free. So it's kind of, there's some interesting commentary in there too.
Yeah, and if I could, I mean, I would echo everything that's been said. I mean, I don't take these as your thoughts, even though it's my first time seeing them. You know, I personally was disappointed when the agency moved from, even though I understood, from no charge for the poles to recycling to even having a charge, because we had extensive conversation over years in the Environment Committee about the benefit of increased waste disposal, and exactly as former legislator Petit said, as an incentivization to really divert. But the other thing I would say, and it's no disrespect to the acting director, is that these are numbers, and that's some of what Deputy Executive LaValle is saying, these are numbers in a vacuum. You know, I don't know what the policies in each of these counties are. Really importantly, I don't know what their numbers are. I would want to know in each county what their waste numbers are and what their recycling numbers are in terms of tonnages and what percentage they're actually achieving with these numbers. And in terms of, again, to me, the gold standard, Oneida Herkimer, I'm pretty sure that there is no fee for recycling at Oneida Herkimer, and it's a fairly low tipping fee. And that's a system that's fully working and fully contained and local. So my first blush reaction is that this very much comes from the perspective of profit profit and financial balance, which we all know that's not the main incentive at this table or for the county. And I mean that we're so often talking to the choir here. The larger issue is really figuring out how to get it to the public. But certainly an incentive to the public to recycle is to have, and I'm not suggesting this, 2 times the tipping fee on solid waste. There is a current legislator that did suggest that, just because that would really push everyone to do everything, not only everything they could to divert, and again, I think it would also result in a lot of waste in the road, but everything they could to divert, but also everyone would become an advocate to the producers, et cetera, because all of a sudden, every piece of waste you had would have a financial impact. If we got to this point where this was a real conversation, I would be a strong and vocal opponent. But I appreciate you sharing it, and I will look at
You asked me to look at the cost of a magic MRF, or was it a fantasy MRF? Mm-hmm. And this is what you sent back. So,
yeah.
The magic
or fantasy MRF. I still think that's the point. I mean, that's what makes it fantasy on some level, is that there's an understanding and an acknowledgement that it's probably not going to break even with flow control, but it's about a kind of a greater good. That's where, you know, the market forces become a discussion and for me, the market forces are a discussion not so much about the finance, but about, is there actually really a market? Forget about the money. Like, is there actually really someone that's going to do something with what we divert? So, does anyone else want to speak on the letter? We can bring it up at the next meeting, too, if people have a chance to look at it in more detail.
I want us to spend some, I don't know whether it'll be in this committee or the agency will do it, but to think about what an appropriately sized Magic Murph would be. You know, can we implement some of the more advanced sorting technologies and be able to afford it? We have talked about Gus or some form of regionalization for the solid waste that's not diverted. We could consider a regional processing facility, because I think that was Anna's point, is that we just don't generate enough to justify that investment. But I believe that with, you know, and I don't know if this takes a consultant to do research or if we can somehow get that information, maybe the recycling staff could look into it through NYSAR, et cetera, but I expect that there is something between what Anna is referring to and what March is dreaming of, and, you know, what is feasible. We certainly do need to upgrade. But in the meantime, I think it absolutely makes sense to let the haulers take it where they're taking it. We went to see the facility in, is it Dutchess County? Materials recycling processing facility there. And I was really impressed, both with how overall how it was set up and the quality of the product that came out of the facility. And I haven't seen the waste management facility up north, but there has been talk about flow control over regulated recyclables. And until we sort out, do we have a facility or can we construct a facility that can handle what is collected at curbside? Because early on, when we were first starting, the haulers had trucks that were not only, I was doodling last night and I drew a picture of the container that, you know, the clear glass went here, and then there was a divided container for brown, amber, mm-hmm. And green, and newspaper was separated from cardboard. All of the separations occurred in one vehicle, and it took a couple minutes at curbside to maintain that sort so that it could go to a very primitive materials recycling facility. So I think it's just important to figure out what that's going to look like, and that might end up being a recommendation, is that we look into that and determine what makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we can do that in the committee, but to recommend that a study be done to determine what makes sense for the amount of material we do collect. And if we had that facility, I would be in favor of flow control for regulated recyclables.
Former Legislator Petit.
Thank you. And again, to follow up with that, I mean, I'm hoping that we're looking at just upgrading the existing MRF, which is 10,000 square feet, and it looks like putting in an optic sorter is between 1 and 2 million. Now, I understand that, you know, even though you're not, the debts are basically paid off, all the bonds for the agency, but it's being put now to look at possibly siting a landfill or putting in some other sort of, we almost say incinerator at this table, but other sort of.
I don't think anyone is back
to the incinerator. Yeah. You know, but there's also grant funding, and years ago it would cover up to $2 million. So if you have a $4 million facility, it would be two. So, you know, I'm hoping that, and I, of course, I understand running it like a business, even though it is a public benefit corporation, because you don't want to be so far into the hole that you have to come back to the agency or raise prices so significantly. Again, you could possibly be losing waste to other counties. So, you know, but I think we should look at what it would cost to upgrade the MRF and what the county could do as far as supporting that as well, you know, financially and other. And take a look at all the opportunities, you know.
I like that word, because that's what I see this as. You know, restructuring our system is not a burden as much as it's an opportunity mm-hmm. to create jobs, create
yes.
a product, create, you know, just a better system, but is not, like I said, opportunity. So maybe if we just look at it that way.
And it would create jobs.
When you make sense like that, you get nominated to write that section.
Oh.
Okay. So,
do you want me to go into
it? Yeah, can we get back into
yes.
materials?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's good with moving into materials now.
Okay. Now, which number would you want?
I don't know.
I believe that we finished all
mm-hmm.
of the items and that we were kind of down to the sections that were talking about the Reuse Innovation Center.
Just the base, I mean, repair and reuse we
yeah.
didn't touch yet.
We haven't?
I don't think so.
No, yeah, it's up right where you were,
Texas,
I think.
Yeah, back up.
You yeah. were right on target, I
yeah,
think.
We
yeah,
we did refrigerants.
Yep.
Okay, so let's...
I think that makes sense, right? We can start with repair and reuse, and if you hand me the minutes from last meeting, I'll, as we're going, I'll... okay, so repair and reuse, I'll open the floor if anyone wants to discuss. We have multiple short and midterm recommendations here in implementation, and then an ongoing, which is the list of secondhand and thrift stores. This does connect with the idea of the county
mm-hmm.
facility in whatever form, but yes, go ahead.
So I want to say it on the record, because we are talking about the Reuse Innovation Center right now, that there was a feasibility study done. I think there was a lot of concern the feasibility study did not really do everything that we needed. It really did not have a budget that was detailed, and it did not provide certain detailed aspects that we would necessarily need if we were to move ahead in pursuing that strategy. But I do sense that there's a lot of interest, not just only at this table, but out in the community for the center. And then I just want to note that there's been discussion sort of both on the point of, you know, centralized a single facility, and also maybe that not making sense, particularly for certain outlying towns. And then thoughts that, you know, we do have these viable transfer stations that are really valuable. So I just wanted to say all that up front, so that when we're going back and reading this section and talking about, you know, these other parts of reuse, including repair cafes and secondhand stores, that we're keeping in mind that this feasibility study had been done, but that it may not provide us all of the roadmap that we need.
We were at the meeting, the RRA meeting last night, and a gentleman from Hurley was there, and he was talking about the work that they were doing to create, you know, a MRF, in a sense, a reuse center for Hurley, and he was discouraged because he thought that the county was going to come in and say, no, we're going to put it all in one centralized
mm-hmm.
location, and nobody seems to think that's a good idea. And I've spoken to the people in New Paltz; they're very proud of their center. I haven't gotten to all the other places, but the idea of a centralized location doesn't have a lot of support in the community that I can tell. I think the idea of the decentralized locations is better. So I would, you know, second what March is saying. You know, when we look at this, we already have a network that works pretty well, and we have to improve it. But I don't want to upend the apple cart and just say, now we're going to take it all to Kingston, because that would be extremely unpopular.
Yes, Legislator Green.
I think the answer, as often is the case, I think the answer is both. And what is the major deficit in the Reuse Innovation Center feasibility study is a failure to recognize the value of the transfer stations. I have a concern that Marlboro is considering closing their transfer station, and I think it would be important to try to understand why and how, you know, what they need to keep it open and make it really useful the way Hurley and New Paltz and others are doing or trying to do. And I think in a fully integrated system, it would be clear what materials can and should come to the Reuse Innovation Center and which can stay in the towns and the towns can handle. And I really like the system in New Paltz where if you bring something in and you're not sure, you pay what it would cost to dispose of it, but in case it doesn't get taken. But if, you know, if over a period of time it is taken and somebody pays a small token amount just to help pay for the operations, that keeps it from having to be transported somewhere else, and it makes it usable in that community. And that, I think, if we acknowledge that that was missing, even though many of us made comment, they had a very iterative process. I'm not sure they listened, or at least didn't incorporate the comments that were made in that regard. But I think giving the towns some flexibility to be creative, but I also think that in terms of the overall budget, if we're adding in a serious reuse component, that there may need to be a shed or a covered roll-off or, you know, some equipment to make that feasible. And then, you know, who is going to pay for the transportation for what goes to the centralized facility?
If I may just respond.
Okay.
Before we got off track with all our personnel matters and such, the board was discussing upgrading, paying to upgrade all the town stations with consistent signage, consistent equipment, like to make it more of a system as opposed to an ad hoc town, county sort of, you know, Rube Goldberg machine. So there is a lot of support, or there was, and I'm sure the new board will feel the same way. And do you want to say something? I think
no, after you.
Well,
I was
I'm finished.
Asking if I was allowed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and I'd like to hear what you have to say. But there, so there is support for like sort of upgrading the whole system on UCRA's dime.
Let me go to Comptroller Gallagher. Did you have your hand?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Yes.
You know, I just want to say one of the first things that I'm going to work with the board on is researching whether a spoken hub type of system, which I think is being spoken to right now, mm-hmm. whether you have some kind of receiving facility near our agency, but using whether it's the transfer stations or whether it's similar to what the clerk does with going out into the town halls with the van, maybe you have a box truck and say, you have anything you want to give away, reuse, we'll come pick it up, preferably probably at the transfer stations, but maybe you have certain days where we have something there, transportation, instead of it, you know, if it can't stay in the community, we pick it up on a certain day of the month, and then we bring it, we resort it, we get rid of it, whether it's to the secondhand stores at auction, then they can resell it, or we have a facility here. It's something I'm going to research, and was one of the thoughts that I've had as we go along.
Yes,
thank you, and I'd love to help you with that. You know, the spoke in the hub, They're doing with the Insecurity Collaborative, Family of Woodstock, Rondout Valley Growers, and they have, you know, the farm hub in Hurley, and then it's brought to five or six different, they're cool bots, and they're throughout the county. It's a large county. And then the churches or the pantries will go to them to pick up. So it helps as kind of a decentralized but not completely type of system. Going with the reuse centers, I mean, you know, we did look at that as a business opportunity. It was about $130,000-$150,000 to build it at the time. We're talking 2012. It's maybe quadruple that now. There was grant funding. It paid for itself in 5 years. The person that's in there, because they were a reuse or recycling assistant, their salary is reimbursable at 50%, as long as they're, you know, doing the education end of it. And then the materials that were diverted, I keep hearing, well, you know, you must be losing a lot of money. Well, we started sending out half of what we were sending out as far as garbage. Gardner said they were spending $5,000 or $6,000 a month to dispose of their garbage. We were spending two. So, but we were also bringing in over $25,000 in revenues, selling things for 50 cents and a dollar, and the building itself was about $5,000 to run. So, you know, it is there. It's not a losing proposition. But you don't have to put them in every town either. Perhaps towns like Hurley, or I think Rochester had reached out once, perhaps those towns would be willing, you know, with some help to put in a real reuse center, so they just don't have people dropping stuff off. And that would divert the waste. Now, how that'll impact the RRA, I don't know, because, you know, you have a put or pay agreement, but as you adjust, as you build your own reuse center, reuse innovation center, and because everything is truly in the waste stream as a commodity, you know, whether it's clothing or, you know, you just really need to think outside the box.
Well, it's an interesting time to be looking at this, because we just finished our debt. We don't have any more debt.
Yeah.
And now we have a new contract coming up. So this is actually perfectly timed to figure all this
good.
Out.
Yeah. And if I may, the spoke and hub is what I was going to say. I mean, I really do think it is both. And I also, I mean, I like that you were talking about it at the agency yesterday in terms of supporting the transfer stations more, because having the transfer stations in such a geographically diverse county is critical to connecting with people. Plus, as I've stated here before, the transfer stations are social networks of towns.
Yes.
You know, when you go to the transfer station, it's like being at the Gardner Post Office. So it's an opportunity, so in some cases a missed opportunity, to educate on this issue and to engage. But some of what I hear, and your idea about this roving truck like the clerk's vehicle is really excellent, because some of what I hear on things that we've discussed to some degree before, things like mattresses, is how are we going to store them? Then we're going to need another, we'll need a, versus a certain day that's mattress day in South, you know, in Southern Ulster, and, you know, everyone knows as long as the communication's there, you have to hold your mattress for maybe a week, and then you know you can bring your mattress, so it's okay, you can stick it in your garage. Could be really a game changer, because these transfer stations are never going to be able to accept everything, and some of them are only open certain days a week. The other thing that I want to raise is that just, you know, my town did something very similar to what Laura began at New Paltz, but in an ad hoc way, until it was pretty aggressively shut down by the town supervisor over concerns over legal liability issues, even to the extent that if I'm going to leave this there and the next person picks it up, that somehow the town might be liable for that. I mean, I personally have gotten a lot of furniture. I mean, I couldn't even right now list all the things that I've gotten at the transfer station when I drive up and I see it there. Books, but they stop. Now they encourage you to throw the books, perfectly good books, in the recycling instead of putting them on the side, because lots of the libraries don't take them, or they take them on certain days. So I think under solid leadership, that's both with a new executive director and an engaged board, that's really interested, like we talk about education as it relates to enforcement, but also as it relates to opportunities. You know, the idea that really working with these transfer stations to navigate that, and could result in a tremendous, just at the transfer stations, a tremendous amount of diversion, having every transfer station be like a little reuse center. But I do think there's going to need to be the both. I think there's going to have to eventually be a centralized reuse center. It's just not going to mean that someone from Denning can only go to that center, or someone from Gardner can only go to that center. But I think it's going to need that hub and spoke, my opinion.
I think that we should encourage any, you know, review of the transfer stations or engagement with the transfer stations by the agency with signage and other things to also look at joint opportunities for things like insurance coverage. I mean, is there a way that we can, you know, minimize the cost there and take the concerns that the supervisor and Gardner had and alleviate them? And there may be other cost, you know, buying 5 sheds is going to be cheaper than buying one at a time.
If I may, yes. Penny Coleman, when we were working on the zero waste implementation plan, I believe went to every single transfer station and with the idea of looking for what they were already doing or hoping to do. And we should try to get that report.
I think it's on the OneDrive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which again,
some
still
of us
don't
can
have
get
access
to.
But so we can work on that.
What was the report?
Yeah.
No, I mean, we don't have access to the OneDrive. If we can make that happen still, if we could bump that back
Vicky,
up.
Vicky, yeah, she sent a message to Tyrone for the people that can't, so I don't know
how
to fix that.
But yeah, the Penny Coleman report on...
I could share those. I have them in the Google Drive. I could share them. Okay. Do you have a Gmail? You have a Gmail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I probably have them somewhere too, but I just feel like it will, especially as we continue this work, and we get down to why we're really going to all need to see the same stuff in the same place at the same time. Like, it's good. We're just going to have to do that, just in terms of getting to the point of writing a report and recommendations.
Well, following up on that, the comptroller had offered to get us email addresses. I think that would have to come through either the vice chair or the chair as a formal request. And then I guess it still has to go through IT. But, you know, yeah, it would be really helpful.
Well, I'll reach out and speak to Vicky directly.
Thank you.
I don't know.
If the clerk of the legislature is okay with it, I'm happy to proceed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry to take us off the point for a moment, but I will re-highlight that the suggestion to do, to look for joint opportunities for cost sharing, I think is an excellent one. And I think the other thing is, which is, you know, not exactly what we're getting into, but is on the subject, is on some level, the towns have had an occasionally fraught relationship with the agency, certain towns. So I think any work to repair that, which is really, and the previous executive was doing that in terms of actually connecting with the towns, is going to be critical moving forward. Because I don't think we can overstate the importance of the transfer stations. And for me, it's, despite all that I like about having it in my community, it's because of the vast nature of the county. Like, if we did not have close and easy places, it would certainly be an issue. And I'm not going to take us totally off course, but I had a prolonged conversation with my transfer station attendant regarding paint, which echoed everything we discussed. It was basically a nightmare conversation and a rehash of everything we talked about. So it is really about making it easiest for people. And so little steps.
Tracy, if I may?
Yes, sure.
Just in terms of spoke and hub, one of the ways I think we were successful in implementing recycling and waste diversion years ago was through the municipal recycling coordinator monthly meetings. And if we're going to try to develop a reuse innovation center with a spoken hub model. I like that analogy. I think it's really important to convene meetings with the people that are running, you know, at the transfer stations. Whenever I go to Rosendale and Marbletown, just to see how they're doing, and we always get into a conversation, so I know what they're thinking, and I've raised this, and they've given me feedback about their concerns, but I think the idea of if this aspect is going to be developed, bringing them in, it does mean that somebody has to cover their absence, and it's a little complicated, but I think it's worth trying, and you know, I think those details can be worked out.
Yes, Mark.
I think, and I'm realizing that, you know, people visualize maybe spoken hub different ways. When I say that, I think I gotta reiterate hub, which is there would be a preferably centralized place somewhere, which could be at the RRA with the spoke system. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, I hear both and I hear whatever, there would be one kind of centralized location where things would eventually end up if they didn't stay within their own community. Mm-hmm. So I understand we have to bring together the transfer stations or the towns in some way with their spokes, and there will definitely be conversation.
Yeah, and I would echo, and I think we should just flag it, you know, as it's something that I would want to highlight as a recommendation in this report, because there's a through line to it. This idea of the municipal recycling coordinators' monthly meetings, the way I'm hearing Legislator Green, is with the agency, right? So it's like the monthly meetings would be with members of the agency. They could be at night. It just the towns would have to realize how to reimburse their coordinators. But I think it's really critical to the agency's greater functioning of changing the dynamic of how it relates to the towns. But it's even more than that. It's changing the perception, but the reality of the role, which is like a much more, in my mind, a much more engaged in terms of education and enforcement. And even though we're not on the subject, I also just want to flag it so I don't forget it. That we've touched on that before, education enforcement, and I don't know what the current status is as to whether or not it's the same person who's doing both, or if you do have two separate people filling those.
Yeah, it's two separate right now.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, great.
We're not really doing much enforcement yet.
Right, right.
Well, I think we have a vacant compliance position, right? Yeah. So that's another priority. Is getting that
it's
all
It's going
to
be like 100 priorities on Monday. But yeah, good. Yeah.
Was that a hand raise? Okay. In this, we haven't really touched on repair cafes. Is there anything we want to talk about repair cafes, or something that sort of happened outside of mm-hmm, our control, but is it something that we want to recognize or acknowledge or support?
I would, it's sort of not broken, don't fix it, but mm-hmm. acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Because Sustainable Hudson Valley took over, and I think there's just a high level of volunteerism, and mm-hmm. It's a great program. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, at some point maybe it needs to be supported or looked at in a different way, but right now I think it's working.
One thing that isn't really happening from the repair cafes that I think would be really interesting is just some sort of measurement of the volume, because anything repaired is being pulled out of the waste stream, and I don't know if that's happening right now, but it does happen?
Yeah,
okay.
We have to file it every month, how many people come in, how many things are repaired. And I'm sure they could attach a weight to that.
That would be so great, because I do think eventually it's going to, maybe to get broaden it and to grow it, it may need support. And if there's documentation and tracking on how much it's pulling out and how much it's saving in terms of carbon and other resources, it may be easier to find funding for it and support for it going forward.
Yeah, because they did just hire Susie, right? Susie Frommer, who's their outreach coordinator, and it, that cost, so.
Right. And again, I think it might be another way, similar to the comptroller's comment about insurance, where maybe, especially because there's paperwork involved with like the DEC 50% reimbursement grants, et cetera, but you could potentially, you know, have some contribution from the county or the towns to help pay the 50% share, and then run it through the agency, and then have some folks who are more, staff that are more focused on the transfer stations and also the repair cafes and the materials diversion side of it.
Yeah. I just had a thought, and it's connected to reuse and diversion and this hub and spoke idea. It's very micro, but the idea eventually of connecting the RA's educator and this hub with art teachers in all of the schools and call for materials, because the idea, for example, one art school in my district was looking for plastic bottle caps to do a mosaic. Next thing you know, everyone was motivated to pull this thing from the stream for the greater good. And I, as a personal example, I had a set of encyclopedias that no one would take, and I said, can you just pull them to the side? I brought them to the library, and I'm like, talk to the local art teachers, because I've seen all these things where you'll take a single page and print onto them, and they got back to me and they said that was a great idea, like they were willing to take them. But had I not had this one specific idea from seeing it, they would have just been in recycling. But I think, again, you have an opportunity, this is another example where you have an opportunity not only to pull specific materials, but to connect with the community and, most importantly, probably youth in the community, who maybe the ideas can begin with them in a way that's just exciting. Opportunities is our theme for today.
Yes.
Building off that, I just want to note we have a lot of arts education that's actually at the adult level as well, like Woodstock School of Art, Women's Studio Workshop.
The colleges.
Yeah, the colleges. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have seen artists like Christina Varga who have like massive troves of what other people would consider garbage going into product and, you know, art and for sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, it's about creating that communication, and it's just another opportunity for the agency. But I say it's this table because I don't want us to forget even little ideas to suggest in a report like this, because they could become big ideas. Anything else on repair and reuse? Yes.
Well, it did come up last night at the ACRA board meeting. I mean, our education folks are in the school districts now talking about composting, so it would be a fairly... We're in at least three or four districts. Right. It would be it would be an easy connection in this, especially right. those districts. But it was talked about making sure that grows.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just want to know. I have to leave in 10 minutes to go to a school board meeting. So when I get up and leave, it's not me.
Okay.
Thank you.
He quits. He doesn't come into work on Monday. Forget it.
Just so I'm keeping time and respecting everyone's time, since we started 15 minutes late, can anyone stay 15 minutes late, or do we have the hard stop at 11?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if it's a hard stop at 11. I'm seeing grimaces.
I can stay.
A hard stop, but I have to end by 11:15, like out the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, and you're it for today.
Deputy Executive?
Same.
Okay, so we'll go to 11:11.
I have to leave at 11 also, but please continue.
Okay. All right, so the next on this list is scrap metal. Market research may require regulation midterm. I don't recall what those notes meant from this work when we did it, but I'll open the floor on scrap metal.
I'll just start by saying, and this again came up last night, we do not have a permit at the RRA for scrap metal specifically, so anything that we divert that's scrap metal is incidental to our operations. So if there was a big push for us to be a collector of scrap metal and a much bigger thing, that would take some work on our part.
Right. And the towns like the scrap metal because they can sell it. So my understanding is that we just left it with the towns. They get it, they can collect it, they can draw the revenue from it. And then, as Mark said, the scrap metal that comes to us is we pull off the floor because it comes in, but we're not permitted to like accept a big load of scrap metal.
Yeah. Yes, Legislator
Green. It used to be that there was a separate container for scrap metal. And I would like to know, are all the towns managing scrap metal on their own, or are some managing scrap metal and some putting scrap metal in with MSW? And if that's the case, I mean, I think there's several ways to approach the change in regulations, and that could be a memorializing resolution. But if that change requires a permitting process, then, you know, I hope the agency will consider going through the permitting process. But one way or another, scrap metal should not be going in with MSW. Mm. And so I think the first thing is to find out what the towns are or are not doing, and then figure out the path from there. If everyone's managing it on their own and their scrap metal dealer is providing them a container and the transportation, it's all taken care of, then that's what we put in the report.
Before I go to you, Comptroller, I just want to ask if we, because I'm not on the OneDrive, did we receive the list of all the transfer stations and the survey of what they're currently doing?
Okay.
Send it to me. I
put
it there. Okay.
So, to me, sitting in my role as fiscal watchdog, scrap metal is a huge internal control issue. Yeah. I am not comfortable that the agency doesn't have a permit. That means that those items need to be taken down to scrap metal dealers by the agency, and I don't think there are good internal controls over the revenues that come back from that, and I think that's true at all the towns, too. Mm-hmm. I do not want some town, you know, transfer station employee taking scrap metal and selling it. It's not, it's very hard to ensure that those revenues are coming back to the solid waste management system. So I just want to say that because we're talking about scrap metal. I would agree with you, Legislator Green, that it would be, you know, maybe one step in the right direction to think about the permitting. And you know, I don't know, it's not a system I've spent a lot of time thinking about, but I can tell you that when we did our audit of compost, I got some whistleblower tips with regard to scrap metal being handled inappropriately.
Mm-hmm. And I would just, to be on the record, and then former Legislator Petit, to be on the record again, I would reiterate my concern with the scrap metal yards that are advising people to cut the lines of Freon devices. I personally heard it on the phone to me asking the question, so it's not a myth. The other thing is we've heard from Chair Baden about how he handles it, getting someone to come to drain those, but I can only expect that others were doing what Gardner was doing before this happened to me, which is accepting the Freon devices into the scrap container, and then those going to the scrap yards where presumably they were being cut by the scrap yards. I have no idea. I know this is not RRA's problem, it's DEC's problem, but I think
it's our problem too.
We do need to weigh in on it. And again, this is yet another example of where the transfer stations can learn from best practices from other transfer stations. We just have to be more proactive in making those connections. And I appreciate what Comptroller Gallagher said and echo that. But the next former Legislator Petit, and then you, Vice Chair Green. I think we have to be wary when we talk about scrap metal in relation to the towns. It's the thing that will cause revolution, for sure. Like, there is a strong feeling about the towns having those money. We've heard it even at this table. So I always favor the whole system versus any one town's returns. I think the whole system is what matters, but I just caution that that's something that we will hear. Yes. Mm-hmm.
My first thought would be that would be a great idea to include scrap metal in with one of the agency's other programs. But then I started thinking about all the scrap metal yards that have caused brownfields and Superfund sites, and I can't see cars with oil leaking all over brought into that transfer station. I don't think that's what it was. So I changed my mind. And then, yes, being boots on the ground with scrap metal, we had a department who always called it their slush fund. And because when I first started at New Paltz, we had a scathing state audit, which led us to not take cash anymore. And even then, it was still very difficult because a precedent had been set. You know, we would only take checks, and the scrap metal yards don't really want to be bothered with checks. They'd prefer to hand you cash in an envelope. So it will be very hard to track. And I think any authority especially wants to get away from cash transactions. So I'm not saying anything about anything, but, you know, humans are humans, and it is very difficult to follow. You know, and you'd also be held to the strict guidelines of the DEC. So if there's oil spilled, or it that may be opening up a whole can of worms. So I would let the scrap yards do their job, let the towns do what they're doing. And that's, and even the scrap yards, when I first started, we had a scrap yard. Oh, it's only $2,000, and you only collected this much. And we had mounds and mounds of metal we collected. And so we switched scrap yards, and the revenues tripled. So it's a sketchy field to dive into.
So I was just going to say, New Paltz, I went to visit the, you know, I live in New Paltz. So I was there, and Mike, who's in charge of it, took me and showed me how they were dealing with the Freon and the air conditioners. So it can be done, and it was really well done, and he was so proud of it, and I don't blame him. So just to pick up on your point, that we can learn from each other, and New Paltz has a good example.
I just want to be clear, I was not suggesting that we take the town's revenues from scrap metal away from the towns. Mm-hmm. That is not my intention. I'm just saying that it's hard to keep track of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that we do that. I'm just saying there will be responsibility suggested, but I also think our charge is to look at the whole system, not the individual transfer stations. Okay, scrap metal, do we want to talk about it anymore? Okay. All right, so moving on to textiles. We're still
I do want to say that there's a parallel between scrap metal and C&D. We had talked about C&D. Now we're talking about scrap metal. They're a little different in terms of the value, and C&D is a more generic term. But I do think that we should be real clear in our recommendations on both in the report. Sorry.
No, everything is important to discuss. Okay, textiles. The short-term recommendation here has to do with regulation, and then the other action is also short-term, which has to do with the drop-off sites. Begin by acknowledging what I think everyone here knows, that textiles are a very one of the difficult materials for facilities. We heard that on all of our facility tours, thin plastic film, textiles, kind of gunk up the works. So I'll open the floor.
I think this is another area where we're not necessarily measuring how much is already being pulled out of the system. You know, we have these boxes at the fire departments. There is a value to what's going into them. I know it's a challenging stream to handle, but there's a lot that's not getting put into MSW right now. And I think we would kind of be shocked at the volume and the impact. I don't know if there's a way to do it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, would there be a way to capture all the firehouses and churches that have drop-offs and get them to report in what their monthly or quarterly collections were? Because maybe we want to do more of it. You know, maybe there are locations where we're not doing it. It would be interesting to see a map of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, where are all these drop-off locations? They're very difficult, I can tell you right now, to manage. My fire department struggles with this all the time. We have people leave absolute junk there. We have put in cameras. We watch them. And we actually now, like, will pursue you by plate number if you leave junk at our drop-off. But, you know, I think those are systems that could, if other facilities knew about it, they might be able to use. And if we really could measure the volume of what's being pulled out, there could be an incentive.
Yes.
Maybe we could just choose some locations diverse, you know, based on whatever range for people who understand how to do, pardon me, my brain's not working. But we could extrapolate is what I'm trying to say. We don't have to go to all of them. We can extrapolate based on what we learned from a few locations.
Yeah.
There are two, and also that there's, not only are there a lot of them, but there are, there's a different scale of what they're doing with it and how they're handling it. I know that there's one drop-off at the agency that I think the same company then has one at the Saugerties Woodstock transfer station, the Saugerties transfer station. That's more towards recycling of those textiles. Mm-hmm. You know, which groups are reusing them, sorting them for reuse, which groups are, you know, do you send your ones that really need to just be recycled? Are they actually being, you know, what's happening to them, basically? It's another, there's a lot of variety in it.
Yeah, and that's, so that's, if I can add, that's, and this is this one of the sections that I did with the work we were doing. You raise a really critical point. It's not just about the volume, because there's all these boxes, but then there's also people bring it to the brick and mortars, right? The thrift stores, Goodwills, Salvation Army. And there is a broad range of where the companies are and how the companies are using the products. There's also, I think, a broad range in terms of education, like what people are willing. Some people, you know, don't want to put a single sock with a hole because they're thinking of everything as going for reuse when, in fact, things are sorted typically for fiber use or scrap use before fiber use and then just fiber use. I do, again, feel it's critical to state for the record that because our challenge is about the system, that extrapolating or finding out exactly what's actually leaving the system to being diverted from the system, which is good that it's not in solid waste, is also an opportunity for the system. You know, when we talk about how much it costs to operate things, this is something that right now has a market, that every individual towns, individual businesses, individual fires are all making money, which is great, but at the point that you're navigating, well, tipping fees are going to go up by X percentage, one way to affect that is with waste or products that are marketable, and this is a marketable product. And for example, I'm not saying to add it as a regulated recyclable, but that's what this is saying. It's if it were a regulated recyclable, all of the returns would be going to the agency, which presumably would be offsetting agency costs, which would have a benefit to the greater good of Ulster County, but would meet resistance where people are making individual money, whether it's individual firehouses or individual towns. The other benefit, and again, I'm not necessarily saying to do it, but I think this table has to discuss it. The other benefit of thinking about it holistically is then there's a holistic effort to educate, to stop what Comptroller Gallagher was talking about, to educate what's required to be removed and what can go into the diverted system, which would include holy socks probably would include stuffed animals, would probably include certain pillows, but most places don't take, but in a system where you were getting everything, you could capture more, regulate and enforce it. So again, I think it's something that we have to talk about. I expect it would be met with resistance on some level, but I think it's important for the whole system. So I'm curious what everyone else at the table thinks about that.
I tend to think that this is another case of it's not broken, don't fix it. That for textiles, it just seems to me that most people know a place that they can bring it, but you're concerned about whether it really is getting reused or recycled is important. But what I take away from this conversation is the need for an annual report of what UCRA is handling and what the waste diversion component is, and to the extent that we can gather that information, and I believe businesses with 25 or more employees have mm-hmm. to report, an analysis of what the waste diversion rate for the county is, so that if we're really trying to approach zero net energy, zero waste, get my energy and waste topics mixed up, but we can really see what the current baseline is and what progress we're making. And I know that's going to be hard, but it has never occurred to me to factor into waste diversion things like textiles that are being handled at satellite locations. They're not even satellite locations because they're not connected, but through other systems.
I can tell you that, and it's Deputy Executive Laval's first point, is that I was, when I dug into the research for the work that we were doing, I was pretty dismayed that it sounded a lot like the breadth of what was happening before the Green Sword, in terms of, I mean, I saw images of mountains. I don't mean small, I mean mountains of textiles in developing nations that were absolutely not being recycled at all, mm-hmm. that had just, depending on what company was, and that's where, when it's the Wild West and it's just going and you're just getting the money from throwing the bags in, not you, but you throw the bags in, you get it out of your house, and whoever has the box is getting the money, but nobody knows where it's actually going, is why central regulation, in addition to the fact that there's revenue, but the idea would be that with central regulation you would be certain that it was going to a place where it was actually getting recycled, reused, repurposed, and that takes work. That's like looking for markets. It's not just so. It's just not as simple. I feel like this. It looks like a system where if it's not broken, don't fix it. But I feel like it probably is pretty broken. And now, I mean, there's tons of information about fast fashion. I mean, we're getting rid of, I don't, like 100 million tons of fabric a year, and that's what's being quantified as fabric versus like as textiles versus what just goes in the, anyone who doesn't go to the yellow boxes and just puts it in their garbage because it's got holes, which is a lot, isn't being calculated. But clothes are made to, I mean, I have clothes from junior high, but clothes now are like made to throw away, so
that's good. I think there is a way to quantify the textiles, because they are at larger big box stores, I don't know about churches, because there are a couple of churches, but they are required to report. So that could always be added. Our transfer station at New Paltz has a box too. And you can get an idea based on, I mean, I'm assuming that some of these companies will actually report, or the fire departments, because, you know, the funds that they get in are paid for by the ton. But we would also estimate ours. I mean, it was basically an 8-yard box, so we knew how many times it would get emptied. With that, too, there is a concern. I've watched these reports on textiles that are sold to other countries at $100 a ton, and most of it is not even resellable there, and there's just mounds of it, and it's, I mean, all they can do is burn it. So I think with this one, the system could go on as it is with additional education, tying it into the repair cafes, because there are a lot of people that don't sew, but, you know, if it's a matter of putting on a button or fixing a seam. And, you know, you're right, the older clothes, you actually, I was just looking at my hole, you actually, you know, would wear through before they fall apart. And an outfit I just bought my granddaughter, she wore once. And it's all frayed, and I'm trying to sew it back up, but I don't think it's worth it. So also incorporating the secondhand stores, that would be an educational, and it'd be a good idea to get it there. Clothing swaps were a lot of fun. So we could do a little bit more with that without actually taking away from, you know, the organizations that are making money on selling the cotton for rags, or the blue jeans for, if they're still using that for insulation, blue jean material?
I think that's the question. Like, where are all these companies?
Yeah.
And that's why the sampling idea really doesn't get it done. Like, it really doesn't tell us what's happening. Mm-hmm. Because there's no way to know, like, exactly how many boxes. Like, we'd have to, I don't know. I'd really rather know every single entrance point. I hate to be, like, a data geek, but the sampling piece, I feel like, is going to overlook a lot of what's happening.
Yeah. I think also so much of what we're touching on, myself included, like this idea of wish cycling, like we want to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we discussed the thin plastic film, like we want to believe that when we bring all that stuff that it's actually becoming a bench, and someone's doing that, and there's millions and millions of benches. It's just, I'm a little bit of a data geek too, a little bit of like a, well,
show me.
Just prove to me that it's actually happening. And I can tell you that when we did a little bit of that work trying to find out what's happening with this plastic film going from certain of the stores with site visits, I made two of the site visits myself, and I never got a clear answer at all where it was going. You know, you should be able to say, like, it goes to this facility, and this is how many tons, like, and here's our measures. So I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm saying that I think sometimes it's easier to just believe it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Do the repair cafes right now do sewing? I don't recall the ones I'm
with.
Okay.
Oh, they don't have sewing?
Not all of them.
Not all of them.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the seamstresses are tough. We've been pretty lucky. So, in fact, we don't have one for our next cafe, so I'm going to have to really start begging.
But I gotta say, I mean, that's something, just even if you talk about advertising the thrift stores, advertising existing seamstresses. I mean, I my shoe repair person is in Beacon. I thought he closed his store. Mm. You know, I was on Main Street and got gobbled up, and now he's like in a little apartment. He's amazing, but I got to go to Beacon. In New York City, they're everywhere. But here, I think people just figure, like, oh, my soul's bad, I'll just throw my shoes away.
Mm-hmm.
But letting people know that they're these, I get calls all the time for do you know a seamstress? Do you know someone?
But it's hard, right? Because it's the step, you know, like a lot of what we're talking about is just kind of like an intervention into how people are handling materials. But then there's this bigger question of, like, cultural commentary, you know, in a lot of places. And so it's, you know, the education is part of that. I've seen great materials from the agency in the past about fast fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the wastefulness of it, the climate impacts of it. But, you know, we're always kind of dealing with this, but this is, over here is a big
yeah. the driver.
And maybe we consider how we acknowledge that thing over there in our recommendations. Just even, I think even just acknowledging that it exists and that it's a part of the problem is probably something, whether it's in the exposition, it's not necessarily an action item, but just a part of our commentary. Textiles, anything more? Okay, we're at 11:02, so it gives us 9 minutes. Do we want to jump into tires? Tires, I think we might be able to handle in 9 minutes.
I think so. We don't accept tires as far as I know.
I think you take up to 4 per load, but it's expensive. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You might know more than I do. Maybe 4 per load, but it's not a major, I don't see it as a major, I just don't know what to say about what the agency does with tires, but I don't think it's a major component.
Yeah, and
Anna is in another meeting. I'm just going to take notes from Anna.
And Laura,
if you know better, Laura, that's good.
Oh,
I really don't
yeah,
know.
No, the tires are difficult. We had, going back to my, I loved working at New Paltz, by the way. We would have a spring drop off, which at one point was very unregulated, so it was free for all. That's why a lot of towns have stopped, because it would come from all over the county, other counties, and we would get hit, especially in that area with the farmers, and we couldn't take in hundreds of tires. It wasn't cost effective. That's a difficult one.
What's the process right now? Will someone remind me? You pay at the front end,
mm-hmm.
and you don't get money back at the back end.
Right,
no, but it
right.
goes towards the state's handling.
But you have to pay again at the back end?
You do.
Typically? Yeah.
Which is difficult, too, because with that new surcharge, which is supposed to go towards education, but I think only $1 of it does, and the rest goes into the oil cleanup. Tires are very dangerous. That's how I met Manna and Marie Post, cleaning up the tire dump that they had up in Saugerties.
Yeah. That was that the one on fire, or was that further up? Catskill
probably
was on fire.
Catskill was on fire, yeah. And there's only one or two companies, I think, Interstate in Connecticut again, and Casings up in Hudson, so it's a hike. So they are difficult, and those are what we would find. I mean, Highway would bring them to us all the time from
woods,
the side of the road.
They're still there.
Yeah, so, and that was a bone of contention. It's the fact that they felt they were paying this surcharge when they purchased the owners, mm-hmm. and then they had to pay again to dispose of it. And upwards of $5 or $6 per tire.
I mean, it seems like just a policy issue that at the state level maybe could be addressed. You know, it might be better to bump up the payment at the front end and not require payment at the back end, and maybe
mm-hmm.
we can have a recommendation from this group that's in our state recommendations, because people do not want to pay at the back end.
I think it should be in our state recommendations, and I would concur. In fact, I don't know if it's radical, but I, for a lot of difficult items, I feel that the way to do it is like the bottle bill, but on a bigger scale. Charge $10 at the front and give $10. If you charge $12 at the front and give $10 back at the end, you'll have people
mm-hmm.
picking up tires and bringing them in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it substantial, but make it be at least close to a wash. And then not only is no one going to dump their tires, people are going to be looking for tires to return. But I do think it has to be a state issue.
Just an aside, that massive tire pile
mm-hmm.
in Saugerties got cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible consensus building process and landscaped, and then was on the list of it was being developed for solar, but somehow it got stopped. And I've asked Amanda if you can...
$4 million interconnection fee.
Pardon?
The site was foreclosure eligible for decades. After that cleanup action, we were able to do a an investigation there, which showed that there wasn't any residual contamination to be concerned about. The county did then foreclose on the property. We worked with NYPA to do a conceptual solar layout. It's really rather well suited to that as far as the site itself. Because it's a quarry, there's quarry walls that kind of shade, protect it from the neighbors and et cetera. However, we got far along in that process, but the interconnection fee was too much to carry the project to construction.
Did you just say $4 million interconnection fee?
And one of the things that and this is an aside, and I apologize, but
it's okay. We can end on the aside. It's good
to share that the Renewable Energy Working Group is looking at areas where, if multiple projects were developed, the cost of interconnection would come down for each of them, and that may be one. There's a strip in New Paltz that goes from the high school to the landfill. That I think there's six projects along that line that could share the cost. And anyway, yeah.
That's great.
Sorry about that, but that project is dear to my heart. Thank you.
Okay, is there, I think we should stop here because we're at 11:08. We only have a couple minutes. We'll pick up Universal Wastes and Batteries. We can make a note. Next time. It says here to schedule the April meetings. Where are we scheduled up to? We scheduled all the way through March?
Yep. March until March. The next one is March 14th and 21st is the next one after that.
14th, 21st. Do we want to schedule April right now?
Well, Mike's not here.
I'm okay waiting until next week.
I think we should wait till the chair.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Okay. Or 2 weeks it is. And you know what, if you want to reach out to Mike, you can ask him if he wants to get it scheduled sooner. He could send a doodle poll through you.
I just want to raise again a concern that I'm not sure how the report is going to get written. And I tried to do what Mark suggested. I think it's going to end up that different people should write up different sections, even as we all, and use the minutes. But I didn't find that I could take the conversation from the minutes and put it into the report. But I think if we can, you know, I already volunteered Laura for a section. But, you know, things that we're interested in and knowledgeable about, if we could do a first pass and then, then share that. That's also something to address when Mike Baden is back.
Yeah, and I think also the important element there is, too, that there's themes, right, of the discussion and kind of cross-cutting areas where, you know, we, I think, are feeling that we would like to lean into or like to suggest further exploration around that. So that's kind of the additive part, I think, of this committee. So just making sure that there's some place in that process where we're also kind of coming back in to not just look at the materials, but really make these kind of cross-cutting suggestions.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have to, and I think, Legislator Green, you recommended this before, but I think we're going to have to before, if the plan is to break out into different drafting exercises, before we do that, we need to first come together and determine where we have consensus. Then there's the cross-cutting sections, but I think we need to be really clear before we set off and write our own missives, which may not have consensus.
It might not make sense to wait till the end to engage on trying to write up a particular section. Like, I feel like we're kind of through the diversion piece now, and maybe we want to, at our next meeting, really talk about how we're going to write this up. And I do think, I agree with Manna, it's very hard. I went through the minutes, and and I highlighted those things that I felt were critical to the reporting, more to say that I feel like they need to be reorganized, like they need to all be cut and pasted. Like everything with the word policy needs to be cut and pasted into one of two sections, state or local, you know what I mean? And I just don't want to wait until we're at the, you know, through disposal and these other sections to really identify and write up or assign the write up for diversion, especially since it's fresh in our mind now.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll make a note.
Plus, it'll make it all easier at the end if we're working it as we go through. We'll start working. You know. We'll work better together. The system will put itself together as we go.
And let me just make a note with Liz then to please make sure that on the next agenda we include a discussion of drafting diversion section. Yes. And I just want to tell you it's 11:12, so you two have 3 minutes.
Yeah. I just want to note that I think, you know, it, there's going to be a temptation to, like, make it this voluminous, and I actually think it's, there could be a lot of benefit to trying to be as streamlined as possible and really push some of the volume to appendices and make the report as, like, really focused as possible.
And we also have things that can be appendices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, like all these documents that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so motion to adjourn.
Move.
Second. Moved in second. Comptroller Gallagher, Vice Chair Gordon. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. See you
in
2 weeks.
All right, 11:13. We did it. Cheering.
Gallagher did motion first.
Mm-hmm.
Gallagher motion.
Yes, and then Jim Gordon.
Would you print stuff, right?
Just so my printer's like sometimes wants to work, sometimes it doesn't. Are you able to do something?
Yeah.